Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Search Disco, your friendly neighborhood podcast about computer-based search analytics and discovery. This is the second part of our great interview with Trey Granger, the SVP of Engineering for LucidWorks. We're going to talk a lot about what's new in solar and what's coming up in the next year for solar. So enjoy. Search on some level is a human computer interface and not a computer to computer interface like SQL queries, and that is always going to be hairier than just find me the three things that are the color blue. Find me the three relevant things that are the color blue is a much more interesting and difficult question, and I don't know that people realize that when they're getting into it.
Though, Matt, you throw out SQL queries, you know, one of the new features of Solar is that you can actually run SQL queries against it.
We saw that. Yeah. That was so perfectly timed because I had just been talking to somebody who had a bunch of business analysts that had a real deference for stuff that was in their MS SQL databases because they knew how to ask it questions. And they were just begging to be able to go in and ask some questions to the Lucene indices through Solar, and they weren't going to learn Lucene syntax, and the query syntax was very focused on, you know, serving the customers. But that dropped at just the perfect time to turn back around and say, oh, here you go.
Yeah.
And you know, interestingly, one of the talks that was given at Revolution was by, it was on the Solar SQL capabilities. And, you know, specifically, you know, if you think of, you know, what can you do with SQL that makes Solar really appealing? Well, one is you've got things like JDBC, where now all of a sudden, whereas previously I had to build my own application layer and I would have to run a, you know, do things like facets and filter queries and filters and grouping and sorting and stats and all of these different APIs and endpoints and capabilities in Solar to get the same answers. Now I could just write a SQL query and I can I can basically do all of those things in a language and a syntax that almost every developer already knows. So I almost think of this, I mean, it's somewhat of a game changer for Solar, or at least I hope it will be, in that, you know, if you think of someone like Elastic, you know, when they came along with Elasticsearch, you know, they focused very heavily on the JSON API and on, you know, simplicity of use, and they attracted a whole new category of developers. You know, a lot of people who are building web applications who, you know, don't have a hardcore information retrieval background, they became interested because they could very easily in their application use this thing. You know, and Solar's added, you know, same kind of capabilities, you know, in recent years, but they, you know, that to the degree that they were able to expand the field of information retrieval by pulling those people in, I feel like Solar now with the, you know, SQL capabilities and graph capabilities and all these kinds of things, you know, it really opens up to the entire pool of developers who know SQL to be able to go and say, hey, if you want free text search and you want these geospatial capabilities and you want relevancy ranking, you can get all of that, but you can do it in a language that you're already familiar with and integrate it with systems you've already built.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was very focused on how inclusive it is because if anybody knows much about the data inner workings of their organization, some of the analysts avoid the Lucene indices because they don't know how to get into them. And so they get sort of left off to the side for the search experts. And I think you're right. It's probably a bigger thing that everybody can go in and start querying. But it also struck me as if this is about information retrieval, then on some fundamental level, that's about understanding and consensus in the organization. So you know how you're sorting and dealing with information. And if the Solar indices are sitting off to the side where analysts won't go touch them or talk to them, they're going to get underserved. And so I think there is an undercurrent, too, of this integrates that information back into your organization even better, let alone making it easier for people to come in and actually start querying that don't come from this background at all, or maybe because of that, and just this different vector. Right. Yeah.
Yep. I just checked the talk I was referring to was Kevin Risden's talk when he was referring, you know, to the SQL capabilities in Solar and, you know, what you could do with them. But I thought that was a great talk, and he walked through how all of this works. So it's definitely a new capability. The one thing I will say about SQL and Solar is that, you know, it's still evolving and emerging. I mean, you can run basic SQL queries, but there's some, you know, some kinds of joins and things like that that aren't fully supported yet. One thing that we do in our commercial product Infusion is we actually have integrated Solar and Spark And we actually leverage Spark for a lot of these, you know, computation capabilities. So we have a Spark Solar project that we develop very actively that integrates Spark and Solar such that you can actually run SQL queries against Spark. And, you know, to the degree that we can push computation down into Solar and have it be lightning fast across billions of documents, we do. And to the degree that there's some of these more sophisticated join kind of queries, we'll let Spark kind of do what it does best as well. So there's you know, a couple of different ways to skin the cat here, but it's definitely really cool to see the SQL capabilities integrated into Solar now.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I look forward to seeing that continue to evolve.
Yeah, and I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited about the infrastructure underneath that too. And maybe I shouldn't talk about it because I really don't have the language to talk about it, but Spark is a big kid that can do a lot of things. I'm a big fan of Spark. But this sort of coordinator idea sitting on the cloud, able to aggregate things and create streams and do SQL-like operations where it can sort of get some answers and then pivot on those answers and be the concierge of your request against the cloud, where the cloud is inherently distributed. But these places that can sort of aggregate results and build them back together for you and bring them out feels like we all learned a lesson from maybe Hadoop or Spark. And now that stuff is integrating itself into the cloud systems that aren't necessarily cloud computation. And I don't even think we've started to see what's going to be neat about that. SQL's a side effect of that. There's some really cool things coming behind that. Am I completely off base there, or does that make some sense?
I think that's right.
I think it's right. Yeah, the Spark obviously is, you know, one of the fastest growing open source projects ever. Out there, and there's a lot of people focused on it and optimization and those kinds of things. So, I like to think, you know, in this idea of community and, you know, open source projects, I like to think of Spark and Solar as friends, meaning, you know, some of these capabilities in Solar are redundant with what's in Spark, but if you are only dealing with Solar, it's nice to use Solar. But I actually, you know, we're at Lucid Works, at least we're very focused on making sure that the two integrate seamlessly so that you can get the best of both worlds depending on your use case.
And just to create a real distinction, I think that everybody's going to look at that and think, I'm comparing Spark to Solar. And what I'm really saying is there are patterns for managing information retrieval across a cluster where there are partitions in the cluster that you have to deal with because you're not on the same CPU or disk or whatever. And there are ways of aggregating data. And these, some of the things that we sort of think of as applications right now in some layer of Hadoop and Spark are really patterns. And to see those patterns come into Solar, and you might pull Spark in, there's a lot of good reason to. It's a more robust version of this pattern. It's, you know, it's text pad versus a really advanced editor, right? But these patterns are the future. This is where we're going to leverage distributed information. And seeing those come into Solar and start to manifest some effects tells me that they're going to keep manifesting really interesting effects because they're the right place to be 10 or 15 years down the line. And I hope nobody misunderstands that as don't use Spark because this is built in. And I hope people hear that as there's a lot of future in the fact that that's manifesting at all. This is the way data is going to organize for the next 10 years. And it's there in Solar and building up as we talk, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things in my mind, you know, most organizations that are using Solar, you know, historically at least, they've put Solar in place, they've used it for their text indexing and their analysis, and they put as much into Solar as they can, but at the end of the day, they end up building their own domain-specific application on top of Solar that ends up being a lot of glue code that does a lot of things. A lot of the things you would have historically done outside of Solar, you can now do within Solar. So give you one example. Imagine a scenario where you've got somebody who is indexing data and they've got three or four different collections that are all related, you know, in a SQL database, they would have been normalized tables and, you would have done joins and all that kind of stuff across, primary and foreign key fields. But in Solar, we've always said, in search in general, we've always said denormalize all of your data.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Solar now has the ability to do joins. You can join across fields. You can join across different collections. And it's very powerful, but anytime you do a join like that, it's going to still be slower. So it's still, if you can denormalize, it's still the recommendation that you do denormalize. But in some cases, that makes it very hard on the application layer, because every time an update comes through for one of the child documents, you have to actually go back and refeed all of the child documents with, or you know, if the parent changes, you have to go back through and refeed all the child documents. Right. So one thing you could actually do in Solr now, if you wanted to, was you could feed, say, four separate collections, have a daemon streaming expression running in Solr, which would actually, you know, when updates come in, pull data from those collections, denormalize them for you, and then feed into a new index. And then what you could actually do is, from your end user who's feeding documents in, all they have to do is update the specific collection they need. But on the Solr side internally, it's actually creating another collection, almost like a materialized view, yeah, which you could actually then send your queries against, and you get really lightning fast denormalized search response times, even though you didn't have to go in and actually do the engineering to build that in your application layer. So it just goes back to this idea of a pattern. You know, the things we've historically recommended people do that were kind of a pain, these days you can still do those things, but you can do them in a very seamless way inside of the engine.
Yeah, I was enjoying that because in my talk, I was talking about recommendation systems with the streaming expressions, which is another application of it. But I was enjoying that kind of stuff because you can, a lot of what you do in recommendation systems is sort of deriving features that were maybe lurking in the data, maybe people viewing a bunch of people who view the same movies, and then it turns out that they also happen to like this other set of movies or that sort of thing.
I like your example of what are my friends like.
Yeah, exactly. What are my friends like? And you can derive those things and potentially materialize that as a view for people to, maybe you want to materialize that into a view just for the sake of doing really fast recommendations around, okay, I'm going to derive Doug and all the movies that I should recommend to him or something like that. Or I could derive into movies themselves, so maybe some level of affinity with other movies. Maybe there's some feature reduced like representation that links together other movies. And then I could do sort of like a more like this on that index to make generate recommendations as I'm searching. Or I could use that in a sense to build personalized search. In addition to keywords, I could use the relationship between you and maybe this field that has some sense of movie affinity to return you movies that maybe we think you might have a preference for. So I think there's a lot of power in that. If you're, maybe you don't want to spin up a whole other Spark cluster, but you want to get a little bit of that, I think streaming expressions can do a lot for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's a lot of things that as Solr continues to evolve that, you know, things that 2 or 3 years ago we would have said, yeah, the search engine can't do that.
Yeah.
That were just painful. Like if you think of joins, you know, it used to be the case, yeah, everything was denormalized, you couldn't join, and all of a sudden now there's a join query parser, and yeah, as part of your query, you can filter on another collection. You know, and once we had then people said, well, how do I actually get the results back from that other collection? I want to filter, but I don't want to just see the results from one collection. I want to, you know, like in a database, if I did a join, I could pull the data together. There's now actually a subquery doc transformer, which, you know, for those who don't know what a doc transformer is, it's the ability on your results documents for you to bring back fields that aren't real fields in your document, but there's some computation that arrived at them. So what you can actually do now is you can send a query in, use the join queue parser to join across two collections, and then on your primary collection, you request a field back which contains the values from your other collection. Mm. So you can actually effectively, by piecing these building blocks together, you effectively have full join capabilities. You just have to kind of, you know, piece them together in the appropriate way.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Going back to Solr being a toolbox and a sort of a kit that allows you to build and do these things.
Yeah, that's really cool. So where do you see, maybe as our last, with a little bit more time left, where do you see Solr going between now and the next Lucene revolution?
Sure. So I talked at the beginning about Solr's the infinitely scalable IR engine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a couple of pieces to that. One is, you know, just general scale needs and some of the Solr cloud hardening and making it easier to use. One of the other things, though, is, you know, a year ago and and even this year at Lucene Solr Revolution, one of the talks was by Nitin, who was from Bloomreach, but he's actually at Netflix now. Mm-hmm. He talked about the Rebalance API that they had built at Bloomreach. And effectively, the Rebalance API allows you to send commands to Solr that enhance its collection management. So, for example, you can send commands like, you know, migrate shard, and what that'll do is move a shard off of one node onto another node. You can have replace, you can have split shard, merge shard. There's all of these different sort of atomic operations that you can execute that allow you to very seamlessly move data, move shards, move collections all across your cluster to either scale them out or to scale them up.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the unique features that Solr has on the scalability front is actually the ability to split and merge shards.
Yeah.
And that prevents you from having to, you know, overshard your collection. Like with Elasticsearch, effectively when you set it up initially, you have to specify the number of shards and that never changes.
Mm-hmm.
But with Solr, you can actually dynamically increase or decrease. And now even with the Rebalance API, migrate from core to core. So we're working, the committers are working to try to get those capabilities all integrated in at an API level. And then what you're going to see is Solr get much more intelligent about understanding the load and the needs on the cluster and being able to actually automatically, you know, split shards or merge shards or add replicas across the cluster as needed, you know, based upon the resources it has. So I think you're going to see Solr get just much more intelligent on the scalability front, on the operations side, let's say, the scalability side. And then on the, you know, relevancy side, you know, obviously we've talked a little bit about the learning to rank stuff that's going in. I think you'll start hearing a lot more use cases from different companies playing with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interesting stuff around classification and, integrating machine learning models, which I think we'll see. And overall, just the streaming expressions platform and new kinds of expressions and hardening and speeding up of those operations, I think you'll see a lot there, which will produce some really interesting new capabilities.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking it out.
One of the other things which we touched on it briefly earlier in terms of the graph capabilities in Solr. One of the other interesting things that you're going to see if you went to Kevin Waters' talk,
mm-hmm.
Where he was talking about his graph query parser, effectively you can run a query to do these interesting relationships, meaning like I want to run a query to find all publications that were within a journal, you know, by where this scientist, you know, was an editor or where this scientist was, you know, a contributor or something like that. You can do these queries. And as part of your query, the one thing you don't necessarily have built into that now is this idea of relevancy weighting on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, with the distributed graph calculations, there's now this idea of scoring nodes and understanding the weights and relationships. One project that I actually worked on last year and going into this year, something called the semantic knowledge graph, which is it's not ready to be contributed to Solr yet. It's still got some work to go, but CareerBuilder open sourced it, and we've talked publicly before about how that was leveraged in our semantic search system to be able to automatically understand and derive related terms and phrases and context based upon queries coming in. So all of this notion around relatedness and, you know, interestingness of phrases and how that can be traversed within a graph and leveraged for things like semantic search and data cleansing and recommendations. I think you're going to see a lot around that as well.
You brought that up a little while ago, and I just want to say to anybody out there that's working in IT, which I assume is everybody listening, you probably at some point complained about the HR desk not knowing how to read a resume. And every time you talk about that in reference to CareerBuilder, I think about how much grief there was for term filters in the HR and hiring process. And I hear that as just a positive thing. The more we can, let's solve that problem.
Get through the HR filter.
Yeah.
Thankfully they've open sourced it so that people can use it in their own domains now as well. But it's a really cool capability.
Yeah.